Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name and your title.
Josh Gibson, and I'm an amateur Adams Morgan historian.
I don't know about amateur, man. You're co-author of the book Adams Morgan Then and Now. You're co-chair of the former Adams Morgan Heritage Trail Working Group. You know, you got the cred. Don't worry. But we're here talking a somber occasion. So this Friday, January 28th, will mark exactly 100 years since the tragic theater collapse of the Knickerbocker Theater down in Adams Morgan. So explain what you have planned. I want to go into the history of the collapse itself, but real quick, let's start with the commemoration you have planned. When and where can we participate in the vigil?
Okay, we'll be meeting up at 6 p.m. on Friday. Most people are probably familiar with the intersection of 18th and Columbia, but they're probably not familiar with the history. On that corner, there's a Starbucks, a McDonald's, and two banks. And we'll be on the bank corner that has the big bulletin board out in front. So that's where you'll see us.
Gotcha. And without further ado, explain exactly what happened on that day. I believe it remains the worst single day loss of life in DC history, at least in peacetime, you know, if we're not counting war or anything. But explain exactly what happened with the snowy roof collapse.
Right. Basically, on that day, DC had the worst snowstorm it ever had, which a record that still holds when 28 inches of snow fell. And what happened is there was a big sort of glorious old style movie theater, movie palace on the corner, and with a place with a huge lobby and lounges, separate lounges for men and women, and really incredibly elaborate, like kind of think like the Uptown on steroids. And people were watching a movie called Get Rich Quick Wallingford, which was back then a silent movie. So an orchestra was playing, it was a comedy. And there were just a total mix of Washingtonians there. All of a sudden in the middle of the movie, they heard a large crack and the roof basically detached almost intact and fell into the building. And on the way down, there was a balcony, you know, kind of thinking of the Uptown, there was a balcony, and the balcony came down as well onto the main auditorium. Mm. So there was just an incredible amount of carnage, and rescue efforts were obviously hampered by the fact that there were, you know, nearly 3 feet of snow on the ground. But people, you know, neighbors, residents, firemen, the military, all scrambled and rallied to try to get people out of the building.
Now, how many, I mean, that I can't even imagine that, just it's mind-blowingly tragic if you happen to be in there watching that movie. How many people, remind people how many people died and how many survived? Like, were there many survivors at all?
98 people died. I think there were something in the area of 200 or so that were injured. And thankfully, I'd have to double check this number, but I think the theater sat like 1,700. So fortunately, there were not as many people there as normally would have been there because of the snow.
Right. So people didn't want to trudge down to the theater in the snow, which might have saved an even bigger loss of life. But man, 98 people dying. That's an insanely high death toll. Like, could I actually have you say it in your voice so I can use the soundbite that it's the biggest, you know, peacetime loss of life, etc.?
Right. Yeah. It's the loss of 98 lives in a single incident is by far the largest single day loss of life in DC history. From a civilian standpoint, during the Battle of Fort Stevens on Georgia Avenue, more people died that day, but that was obviously wartime, so that's a little different.
Right. This is the biggest peacetime single day loss of life, which is mind-boggling if you think about what transpired 100 years ago. Let's set the scene. You mentioned that there was, you know, they were all in there. It was a movie palace. They were all watching this movie, Get Rich Quick Wallingford. It was, I don't know if any movie buffs, but it was directed by Frank Borzage, who like won 2 Oscars as a director for Seventh Heaven, Bad Girl, a bunch of old movies back in the silent days. And it starred Sam Hardy as the Wallingford character. And he went on to be in King Kong years later. But so imagine everyone's coming, they're going to see this big thing. And back then movies were a much, you know, a bigger deal. It was like going out for the event, you know, a big movie palace. And all of a sudden they start hearing like the cracking above, but so sort of started to describe what it must have been like in there. Like what wasn't, I believe a Washington Post drama columnist John was in there right at the time and documented it.
Yeah, it's he was there. I guess, you know, to see the movie, to maybe write a movie review. And it ended up working out really well from a journalistic standpoint, at least, that there was someone there to record the tragedy in real time. And there's stories about him, you know, he had to rush. There was a phone across the street. There was a people's drugstore that was across the street. He had to, you know, everyone wanted to use the phone and call family and ask if, I dropped my kid off at the movie and I was just driving away and then the roof collapsed and, oh my God, I need to call, call the police or call the fire department. And meanwhile, this Post critic is also on the phone trying to get the information he needs. It's just like if you went to a movie today and you kind of went through the crowd and asked people who they were and why they were there. There were people on dates. There were parents who brought their children for a weekend comedy, a light weekend comedy. And there's just all kinds of tragic tales of one guy, the roof collapsed right over his head, but it stopped right before it hit his head. But he died of a heart attack. He died fear, basically.
Do you know that guy's name?
I'd have to dig it up.
Yeah, no worries, no worries.
But I mean, the fact that there was a movie theater critic who was the one who wrote the coverage meant that the coverage is very evocative and very dramatic. And it just, I mean, cases where two people were sitting next to each other and one of them was crushed instantly and one of them survived. And another case where one or two people that were apparently just about to enter the theater part of the, you know, go from the lobby into the movie theater room. And the roof collapsed and it literally blew them through the lobby and out into the street. So it's like all these terrible disasters, these stories of, oh, someone hadn't seen a movie and hadn't seen a movie in 10 years and it was the first movie they saw, this was the one, and it did them in. And other people that went every Friday night and, you know, decided to skip one and it was this one. You know, there's all kinds of crazy stories like that.
Yeah, it makes you really think of like how many different families or generations of families could maybe, 98 families could trace back of the victims and even more. I read that there was 300 people in attendance. So yeah, so basically 300 different people and their families and their descendants have stories of, you know, oh, if I had only gone to the theater that day, my grandkids might not be alive. I mean, that's wild. So yeah, John J. Daly was the Post drama critic's name. And he basically, like you're saying, thanks for painting such a vivid picture, running across to the phone. And I mean, he basically becomes a breaking news reporter that day and delivers this breathless on the phone, you know, description, 5,000 words, I guess. And do you happen to have the passages in front of you?
There's two excerpts from the article. The first is, with a roar, mighty as the crack of doom, the massive roof of the Knickerbocker broke loose from its steel moorings and crashed down upon the heads of those in the balcony. Under the weight of the fallen roof, the balcony gave way. Most of the audience was entombed. It was as sudden as the turning off of an electric light.
What description? Then, that's wow, like a light going off. So sudden. All right, and what was the second excerpt?
The second excerpt is... if possible, it was worse than hell. Prayers ascended from the lips of sordid sinners. Brave hearts rallied at their own helplessness of the power stripped from them to do even one act of mercy. Weak men suddenly turned into giants, hoping to lift the rafters of a fallen temple of mirth and free the stricken beneath.
And we don't get writing like that anymore. I mean, I guess we do. But man, that is really well done description right there. But man, the tragedy of being in there. Do you know like architecturally, structurally, what was wrong? Like what was the design flaw that caused it to collapse? Do you know?
Apparently, and I'm not obviously an architectural expert, but my understanding is, well, first of all, they held hearings into what happened, congressional hearings into what happened, because it was such a, like everything in DC, it was an internationally reported tragedy. It affected the nation. You know, the president suspended all of his activities for the day. Congress ended up investigating what had happened. But at the end of the day, it was really a hometown tragedy. It was really the neighbors and the people, the residents of Adams, what is now called Adams Morgan, who suffered the most. But what they think happened with the roof is that the roof, basically on one end, it was on sort of a square surface, and on one end, it was on kind of a rounded surface, and that it basically slid off the rounded surface. It was not connected properly. So that the roof kind of slid off of, picture like a house of cards, to use a terrible analogy. Mm-hmm. And the top card just kind of was too close to the edge, and it was on a rounded edge, and it just slipped down. Mm-hmm. And the top card sort of toppled into the building and then took the balcony down with it.
I can't even imagine.
The other thing that's really unbelievable is, because of the way the collapse happened, with the roof just basically falling in, the exterior walls and a lot of the common spaces were left largely intact. So in the aftermath of the tragedy, they turned it back into a movie theater. They changed the name. It went from the Knickerbocker to the Ambassador, but it was built back. You know, from the outside, not much changed. It was just a different movie theater with a different name. And that movie theater was around through the 60s or 70s, the second incarnation.
Wow. And then you said in today I guess in the 60s, 70s that folded. And now it's, would you say a Starbucks?
No, it was, when they demolished the second theater, and the second theater, by the way, has its own fascinating story. Jimi Hendrix played in the follow-on theater after it was a movie theater. It became kind of a concert venue, gathering spot during the 60s. So Hendrix played there, lit a guitar on fire. Norman Mailer spoke there to an anti-war crowd, and then they headed out to go try to levitate the Pentagon. But then once they did finally demolish the theater, there was an effort to put a BP gas station there, and the community rallied and fought the gas station. And in the end, they ended up putting a bank there, and the bank has since closed. And now that spot is slated for redevelopment.
Well, thank you for joining us. This is a lot of good info and a lot of history. I mean, I myself, I plead ignorance on that. I did not even know about this until I guess this anniversary started coming up. So explain how that worked for you and folks like yourself who are so, steeped in the history of Adams Morgan. Like I assume for at least the last couple months or even years, you've been eyeing this anniversary date on the calendar. You saw it coming up. So take me into the process of, you guys sort of rallying together and say, hey, we should plan a commemoration.
Well, here's the crazy thing. We, back in the early 2000s, we were working on what's called a heritage trail, which are those like historic signs you see in neighborhoods now with photos that try to give you a little bit of the history of the neighborhood. We were working on that process for Adams Morgan, and I was taking a bus downtown to go to a meeting. And I stepped off the bus down sort of by the Capitol. And as soon as I stepped off the bus, I heard someone say, "Oh my God, a plane just hit the Pentagon." And it was 9/11. So I was deep in this process on 9/11. And the very first thought, because I was so deep in this history, the very first thought that came to my mind was, I pray that the Knickerbocker remains the single highest loss of life in district history. And I mean, you know, the region paid up a high price and the nation paid a high price, but thankfully DC, that did remain, the Knickerbocker did remain the biggest single day loss of life.
Right. Because you're saying because the Pentagon's in Virginia, is that why?
Right. So that in my, but I just think, I mean, the scope of the disasters, I mean, I guess the casualty counts were different, but they're just so, they leave such a mark in the memory. So just like we all remember where we were on 9/11, folks, I think for decades and decades after would remember where they were the night of the Knickerbocker.
To your point, it's sort of like once in a century kind of stuff. I mean, well, actually that raises a good point. Now I know we're getting into the weeds, but in terms of historians, it's fascinating. Would, even if the Pentagon had been in DC on 9/11, would that count as peacetime though? Because I mean, I don't know if that counts as a terrorist attack that launches the quote war on terror. Does that count as a war? I don't know. That'd be fascinating how that would be classified.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, it's not like it's an official statistic that peacetime loss of life.
Sure.
It's not really like a statistic you can track, but it's true that that one is kind of on the margin.
Interesting.
But yeah, so I've been fascinated by it going all the way back to 2001. And every time, you know, it pops up a little bit in the media in terms of every time we have a big snowstorm, they tend to run the chart that's like, where does this fall in the biggest storms we've had? And the Knickerbocker is always top of the list. And the other thing that's fascinating is they're apparently saying we might get snow Friday into Saturday. So that's just kind of eerie.
Oh, we are. Are we really supposed to get snow again this weekend during this anniversary? That is eerie.
Yeah.
That's very eerie.
They seem to, you know, it's too many days out, but they seem to say it's a big storm and someone is on the East Coast is going to get walloped. But it seems like it may not be us this time, but even just the thought of it on the anniversary is spooky.
Yeah, that's chilling. Well, cool. Well, remind us again, real like how we opened the interview. Let's wrap it full circle. You know, how can folks participate in this vigil? You know, when and where is it?
So it is on Friday at 6 p.m. It's at the corner of 18th and Columbia. We'll meet up near, probably near the big bulletin board that is on one of the four corners. And we are going to do, it's an outdoor event in January. So it'll be a fairly short program, basically why the Knickerbocker matters, a bit about the history, and then we'll read the names of the 98 victims with a candlelight ringing a bell for each victim. And that's the plan.
Wow. Well, that's a great service you're providing the community to remind everyone, not only just say, hey, this happened, but to actually read the victims' names. That's going to be powerful. And a slice of history that people don't really realize. I mean, do you find that in your own historical preservation work? Do you find that a lot of people aren't, you know, just going about their daily lives in DC and don't even know about this?
Basically, I mean, it's like is so often the case with DC, there are these layers of history and people think of the national events that shape DC and the international events that shape DC, but they forget that DC is also a hometown and has local events. And a lot of the neighborhood history gets forgotten or gets, you know, the national history gets prioritized and the neighborhood history gets forgotten. So any opportunity to unearth this local history and let folks know that actually some fascinating or sometimes terrible things happened right in your own neighborhood. You don't have to go down to the mall to experience history and monuments. There's history all around us, and the history of people like you and me who are residents, who are living here, who are Washingtonians, and who deserve to be remembered.
Right. Well, thank you so much for keeping the hometown history side of it alive. You're right. There's so much national history here. And to me, I mean, I'm sure you agree. That's why this makes it the most fascinating area to live in and cover journalistically, too. And as a historian for yourself, because it literally is. It's the national history all interwoven with local history. It's, I mean, come on, you can't get any better than that. But it's sad when we have to mark these occasions, but I appreciate people like yourself that are, you know, keeping that history alive and the word going about these things so that these horrific events, they're never forgotten and those lives are never forgotten. So I appreciate it.
Right. The number of people who walk by 18th and Columbia on an average weekend night and have no clue that 98 people died feet from where they're walking, that Jimi Hendrix burned a guitar feet from where they're walking. It's a shame because I think people would really be into it if they learned about it. And that's what we're trying to do.
Is there a plaque or anything there? Excuse me. Forgive me if you already mentioned it, but is there, like, to your point, like people staggering drunk down the street, going out in Adams Morgan on a weekend, like there should be at least, I mean, in a way that's sort of a mass grave site of where 98 people died. Is there at least like a plaque or a headstone or anything?
There isn't. There is on the opposite corner, actually on the corner where we're meeting for the event, there is one of these heritage trail signs, you know, that looks kind of like a sign you'd see before a museum exhibit.
Right.
That goes into the history of and includes a number of photos of the Knickerbocker. But, you know, it's the kind of thing if you're walking in or out of the neighborhood with a bunch of buddies, you know, you're not always going to stop and read the historical sign on the corner. But for the folks that are kind of taking their time and moseying through the neighborhood, they definitely can check it out and get some of the history there.
Well, let that be a good reminder then, isn't, you know, even if you're out on the town with your friends, take a minute and stop and read those signs that have been carefully and historically put up, because you never know, you might be walking by somewhere where 98 people perished. And maybe, you know, moment of silence as you walk by that area next time. But hey, thanks so much for doing this, Josh. I really appreciate it. We'll get the word out on WTOP for people to attend. I really appreciate you doing this.
Oh, no problem. I appreciate you covering it.